Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, and today we have a really fun chat with Catherine Hansen and I. Catherine Hansen returns, yay, author of Brain Over Binge, and today we are going to be debunking some recovery myths, so recovery from, you know, binge eating and bulimia and any sort of food craziness. So it's just going to be a fun discussion. So I want to welcome onto the show Catherine Hansen. Hello, Catherine Hansen. So we want to give you guys a little bit of a framework of, we have kind of an alternative approach from the mainstream therapy approach in the ideas of how to recover from binge eating and bulimia. And so Catherine's going to go over a little bit like what the therapy approach is, so you guys have some framework, and then a little bit about how her approach is different, and then I'll jump in with my approach and we'll kind of go from there and then start debunking things for you guys. So Catherine, tell us a little bit about, like, for those who don't know, just a real basic overview of, like, what is the therapy approach and then how is your approach kind of different?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, to understand what we're debunking in this show, that we need to talk about what we are debunking. So I'm going to kind of go over therapy and what is traditionally taught. And I went through about 6 years of therapy. And if anyone who's read my book, Brain Over Binge, or the Brain Over Binge Recovery Guide, you'll know that therapy wasn't helpful to me. And as both Lydia and I agree that it does help some people, the recovery rates aren't very high, but it does help some people. So if therapy's helping you, that's wonderful. Like, we don't think that anything needs to be changed with whatever's helping you. So let me just talk about what therapy traditionally teaches. And this is what I learned when I was in therapy. It was, the main overarching theory is that an eating disorder, binge eating, is basically a coping mechanism. And it's a coping mechanism for some sort of problem, either daily problems in your life, like stressors and things that upset you during the day, and you turn to binge eating to cope, or it is a coping mechanism that sort of develops from underlying issues from your past, and issues that just depression or anxiety or problems in your childhood, and that it just, you basically need to binge to fill some sort of emotional void, emotional need. And following that logic, what therapy then teaches is then you have to find better ways to cope. You have to learn healthier ways to cope. You have to figure out sort of these issues from your past and get to the bottom of it and solve it, basically, and become sort of a transformed person and be able to deal with your daily life and your daily stressors. And you know, it's kind of a big undertaking, but the end result in theory should be you should cope in a healthy way, and therefore you shouldn't need to binge. Like, your desire to binge should go away because you take away the need for it, which is that need to cope. Now, my approach is different because I believe that you're not coping with emotions and problems, and those things, you know, they might be indirectly related somehow to binge eating, but when you binge, you're really coping with the urge to binge. The urge to binge, these cravings, these feelings, sensations that really just drive you to binge, that feel so out of control, that's really what causes you to binge each and every time. Like, there's nothing besides that that directly causes you to binge. Because think about your life before binge eating. You probably felt lonely or scared or stressed or tired, and you didn't binge because there wasn't that urge to binge. So I really teach people that binge eating is a way of coping with these urges. And I'm trying to give people an alternative way to sort of deal with these urges. And if you don't act on them, and over time, they go away. So I really try to focus on the urges, teach people how to, what I call, dismiss them, and just not really, not worry about other problems in your life, because of course that's important and that deserves attention. But as far as recovery and binge eating, I really think focusing on the urges, which are the direct cause, is how to go about a more efficient recovery. And I know Lydia shares a similar perspective. So, you know, tell us a little bit about how you focus on it as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. That was really well summed up. So what I would say is, like,
I would absolutely agree. You know, the therapy approach, you sum that up really well. The way that I sort of give people tools to, you know, have a way to recover, and not just recover, like put a Band-Aid on it and like just deal with it every day and squeak by for the rest of their lives. But I believe in a full recovery. Like that's something that you used to do, and that's something you can be completely free of. And I do that through a combination of neuroscience principles and mindfulness tools. So for me, it's really about the mindfulness principle of observing your thought and being able to see this thought that is driving you to binge eat, and then see it with your logical brain. Because when you see it from a different perspective, then you can navigate and do what you want to do, and you know that you're back in the driver's seat. You were always in the driver's seat, but this is just a way to kind of wake yourself up to that idea and really create a new habit and break down those neurological connections that kept you in that old habit. And I think Catherine and I both agree is that we think of binge eating or bulimia as a habit-based thing, not as a disease or disorder-based thing. So that's a little bit of my approach. And so there are so many sort of myths out there. And again, we would call them myths. Like, we are not psychologists or doctors or anything like that. Like, we, you know, share our approach, but remember, this is just our own opinion. This is not to replace any sort of like therapy or medical attention. These are myths as we see the myths in the world, and us debunking them as we think they should be debunked. So, and then you can just like take in that information and decide for yourself. But we're going to go over some of these myths and just talk a little bit about like what is sort of the truth as we see it, as an alternate to this idea. So yeah, are you ready to go, Catherine? Or anything else you want to add?
No, that was great.
Okay, awesome. So the first myth that we wanted to talk about, and Catherine's going to take the lead on this one because she talks a little bit about it in her book, Brain Over Binge. But the myth of the ideas of what recovery looks like. So she talks about sort of this tamed house pet theory and sort of this butterfly tail theory. And so, Catherine, go ahead and debunk sort of these myths about what recovery can look like.
Sure. And the two types of recovery basically come from the way that eating disorders are traditionally treated. The one way is kind of the way I just talked about, which is more psychodynamic approach and getting to the root causes and solving those root causes. And that should lead to a fundamental transformation. Like, you're just able to cope, you are happy and satisfied in your life, and therefore you don't need to binge. And that is the butterfly tale. So when I was in therapy, I was in college and I was young, and I thought that's what I needed to do. And as everyone knows, that's a really confusing time in your life. And it's just the idea of having to solve everything and fix everything from your childhood, and you don't even know what you want to do with your life. It was just very, very, I just felt way too big for me. It never worked for me. And in the tamed house pet theory comes from the more cognitive behavioral approach. And that's like similar to what we teach, but not really. It's like fixing the thought, changing the thought so that you can have different behaviors. And it really requires like constant maintenance. It requires meal plans. It requires just watching out for triggers all the time and like dealing with those triggers so that you don't binge. So it's not just, you know, dismissing the urge, or like Lydia teaches, realizing it comes from a more primitive part of your brain and that you don't even need to pay attention to it. It's more like analyzing the thoughts that tell you to binge and figure out, okay, why do I need to binge and what caused it and how can I solve that? So it's really kind of dealing with triggers in a way that you have to do for the rest of your life. And that also didn't work for me because I felt like I had so many triggers, and sometimes they were so variable. Like, sometimes I'd binge when I was happy and sometimes I'd binge when I was sad. And it was really hard to figure out, you know, all these triggers and cope with all of them, especially like I just said, it was a very complicated and confusing time in my life anyway. So those two types of recovery is what I really try to sort of debunk in my book, because I was able to stop the habit of binge eating by sort of understanding the habit in a new way and applying some principles to stop acting on the urges, and it just went away. And it was just the habit went away, and I still was the same person fundamentally. I'm just free of this habit. And I don't know, I still have problems. I still am not perfect. I'm not a fundamentally, you know, butterfly. I'm not fundamentally changed person. And I also don't have to maintain my recovery. I don't have to eat in a certain way. I don't have to watch out for triggers. It's just normal life again. And that's really what I try to explain in my book.
Beautiful. I love that. And just a couple of things that I would jump in and add is like, with this sort of myth of like, well, it has to be this way or it has to be that way. One thing that I find is for many women that I coach, they've fixed it all. Like, it should be a butterfly tale for them. Like, they've been in 20 years of therapy and they dealt with all of these issues that were getting in the way of, you know, they dealt with their stress and they dealt with their relationships. And surprise, like, they're still binge eating. This is something that I call like the false miracle cure. Like, fix all this stuff and then you'll be cured from binge eating. And then if you don't, oh, well, there must be more stuff to fix. And it's like this never-ending journey of fixing things that aren't actually related to the problem that you came to therapy for in the first place. So yeah, I would absolutely agree. It's like, those are some ideas out there, but there's definitely a way to be free that doesn't have to do with fixing all your problems. And even if you fix all your problems, that's not necessarily going to fix this problem for you. Yeah. So awesome. Okay. Next myth to debunk. The myth that you must avoid all of your triggers to have recovery, to be free of binge eating and bulimia. So how I would approach this is there are a couple of things that I would talk about here. So the first is that to make any sort of change in your life, in my belief, you change your brain, and that's your prefrontal cortex. I call that the you brain. So that's this part of your brain up here, the one that really feels like you, the one that's making choices. So something that's really interesting about that is you don't rewire your brain and you don't change your brain while you are either following orders or just trying to like be out of that situation. So if you are just like, hey, I'm just going to avoid my triggers, you're not actually changing your brain. And what happens is you start getting more and more triggers because it's like, okay, well, I'm really triggered by being by myself. So I'm not ever going to be by myself. And you try to avoid that. Oh, but wait, while I was with other people and I was sad, I was still binge eating. Okay, well, now I have to avoid that. And literally your world gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and your triggers just keep stacking up. And so it's this kind of terrible situation. So what I say is live, so this is the debunking part. I say live your life, like live your normal life. And it's actually a beautiful thing because you're creating recovery for yourself in your actual life that you're living. Because with the alternate way, like, okay, sure, avoid all of your triggers. But if that seems to help, guess what happens? You're going to have to go back to your life eventually. You're going to have to be alone at some point in your life. You're going to have to be sad at some point in your life. And if you haven't dealt with moving through these sort of, you know, thoughts, I call it the chatter. Catherine probably used the language, you know, those urges to binge. If you haven't dealt with them in the moment, then you haven't made those brain changes. So you're constantly scared. So I say live your life. And just realize you don't have to be afraid of your thoughts. Like, you can deal with them. And then you're actually changing your prefrontal cortex, what I call the you brain. And so you can have recovery without putting a pause button on your entire life. So, boom. That's how I would say you would debunk that myth about triggers.
I agree. Okay. We're both talk about the concept of changing your brain, which is neuroplasticity. And it's a very well-researched concept, and it's you have to experience the urges to really have that brain change. You can't just avoid them. It's like any habit, like if you never have I'm kind of losing it here but you have to have the urge in order to not act on it, in order to change your brain. Like, you have to have the cue that tells you to do something and then not do it in order to have that change. If you never have the cue that tells you to do it, then you're not creating that same change.
Yeah.
And what I tell people about triggers too is that, you know, if there's one thing that you really, really just always leads you to binge and you're really having trouble like stepping back in that moment and recognizing the thoughts, it's okay to avoid it for a little while. Like, it's okay. I tell people that. Like, don't feel shame in avoiding something for a little while if you feel like that's what you need to do temporarily, as long as you're facing the urges in other situations and creating that change. And then once you build up some confidence and build up, you know, some just basically confidence in yourself, then you'll be able to face that trigger that's more challenging for you. So it's not like you have to do it, you know, from day one in recovery, but over time you want to be in those situations and make a different choice to therefore change your brain.
Yeah. Awesome. Great point. I'm so glad you brought that up, and I'd absolutely agree. Like, and you can use these principles and practice with your life as it already is without like introducing every food that you're scared of all at once, you know? But then as you introduce those things, and there's no have to, but you've already kind of exercised those muscles in your brain, you know, to make the changes, that neuroplasticity that you were talking about. So you're already kind of down that track. Sometimes I think of it like like having a relationship. You know, it's like, if you believe that to have a good relationship, you have to avoid any problems and all conflict, then you never really get to a great relationship. But when it's like, you know what, like, I'm not going to avoid these things, I'm going to work through them with my partner, then you actually get to this deeper place in your relationship. So sometimes I think of it that way, is, and you don't need to avoid all your triggers. You don't need to avoid all the conflict. Like, you need to learn how to work through it within it. And you're stronger on the other end. Like, this is the good stuff. This is the opportunity for a practice. I always tell my clients, like, oh good, there's more chatter. Oh good, like, you know, you can celebrate. Like, I get to practice now. Yay, I feel super crazy right now. Yay, I get to practice. Like, it's a good thing. Like, this is where the change happens. So awesome, awesome. Okay, so the next myth is that to recover, you have to really accept that you're an addict, or you have to accept that you have a disease or are flawed in some way. So Catherine, why don't you lead out on this one? Like, how would you debunk such a myth?
Yeah, that's another one that requires sort of a paradigm shift in what we are talking about. And an addict, yeah, you believe that you're diseased, you believe that you're flawed, and therefore, like, you just don't believe you're normal anymore. And to me, that just, it leads to sort of a victim mentality. Like, you're a victim, something is wrong, you have to get to the bottom of it and fix it, and you might have to deal with it for the rest of your life. And I don't know, to me, that's just, it's just depressing. And when I thought that, it led to that, just feelings of hopelessness and powerlessness. And what we're teaching is really how to put you back in the driver's seat, and how to give you control and power, and teach you that it's not a disease, it's just that your brain has temporarily become wired to crave the binges, to perpetuate this habit. So it's not a disease, it's sort of a temporary glitch in your lower brain. I call it the lower brain, you call it the chatter brain, and it's the same thing. And your higher brain, which you call the you brain, has the ability to sort of override that and to change the wiring so that it no longer encourages that habit. So it's just that you don't need to binge. It's just that your brain temporarily thinks that you do. Your brain is in this perpetual cycle that is telling you that you have to binge to survive, but you don't. So the more you can realize that, the more you can realize that it's not a disease. That's just a temporary problem that can be overcome.
Yeah. Beautiful. I love it. Ditto. Two thumbs up to all of that. Awesome. Okay. So the next myth is this idea that you have to binge when you're coping with things, or like binging is a tool that you have for coping. So when we look at this, just like in a logical way, this is something that I teach people to do. I teach them a tool called calling out the chatter, which is essentially a mindfulness tool to observe your thought, the chatter, like the thing that's making you want to binge, right? So a lot of times when people just have these sorts of thoughts in their head, they just act on them. But when they kind of get them out in front of their logical brain, one of the first and most common reactions that people have is they start laughing. For the first time, they start laughing at this idea, because a thought might be like this: I am really sad and stressed, so my chatter is saying that I need to just go and eat everything in the cupboard. And they'll start laughing, because it's like, wait, how is that going to help me with my stress? But when it's inside your own head, it doesn't seem ridiculous. It seems sad. It seems like I have to do this. And so when looking at it with your logical brain, everything changes. So that's one thing. When we look at these thoughts about coping from our logical brain, they don't make sense to us anymore. So just intellectually, that myth about coping is, I think, debunked. The other thing that I would say is that we don't binge because we're coping with anything. I think that binging starts from a lot of different places. It may start because you felt sad and then ate food to feel better. But then every time you feel sad, it's not like you have to cope with food. It's just that your brain has gotten into a habit. And that lower brain, that chatter brain, perpetuates habit. It's just one thing that it does. So it really wants to keep going with the habit of, oh, every time we're sad, we eat. There's nothing personal about it. It's just something you've done before that your brain wants to perpetuate. And then the third thing is, like, things don't get worse if you deal with them. So a lot of times we'll have this chatter in our mind, like, oh, well, it's too much to feel this way. It's too much to feel this sad. So I have to do something to cope with it. I have to, you know, eat all this food. I have to do it to feel better. First, you know, the it's not really feeling better. It's feeling less. You feel everything less. It's a numbing sort of thing to do. So you're not feeling better. You're actually feeling less. And then the other thing is that it's not helping you deal with that emotion. Like when you eat all that food, you're still going to be dealing with the emotion, but on the other end, along with the guilt of binging and along with the physical effects of binging. So the emotion that you're feeling, dealing with it directly, a lot of times will be afraid of just being sad. But I challenge you, next time you feel sad, just feel sad. Like that's a really common mindfulness principle of just like being in the emotion, just like let it swallow you whole, let it take you over, and realize that despite what your chatterbrain is telling you, you don't die. Like you're not dead on the other end. You can just feel really, really sad for a while. And then the feeling changes because no feeling lasts. So feelings don't get worse when we deal with them. We can just a lot of times try to numb them with things that perpetuate these habits that we don't want anyway. So that's how I would debunk the idea, this myth that like, oh, we have to binge, you know, as a coping mechanism. Anything that you would add to that, Catherine?
I thought that was great. I mean, most people know and on some level that this is not helping them cope. And the thing with therapy is that it gives these urges all this meaning, and there's just all this attention. Like I want to binge, I must need it. I have to, you're just putting this attention on these brain pathways that are just temporarily faulty. So you're really fueling them by giving them meaning. So what we're both of us try to do in our approach is to take the attention away from these pathways and from these thoughts and these sensations. I describe an urge to binge as any thought, feeling, or physical sensation that encourages binge eating. So the goal is to be able to, like you said, use mindfulness to detach from these thoughts, to realize that they're just automatic. They're just coming because that's what you've taught your brain in the past. And they might come because you've connected it to sadness, but that doesn't mean that you fundamentally can't cope with sadness. Like you cope with sadness before you started binging. You'll cope with sadness after. You'll cope with it sometimes well, sometimes not. Sometimes you'll cry and sometimes you'll find something productive. But I don't know. We kind of have this sort of natural mechanism that allows us to find ways to cope once we stop, you know, using these habits to cover up the emotion. The emotions aren't going to kill you. Like you said, it's actually nice to feel the emotion and to experience life and not to feel numb all the time. So that's just what I would add to that.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. One last thought that kind of came up on my end is, like you said, we give all, or, you know, with a therapy approach, it's like all this meaning to the urges and like, oh, well, they must be important because I'm feeling them so strongly. And one thing that I teach my clients is just because you think it doesn't mean it's true. Mm-hmm. Like just because it's in your brain a lot, it doesn't mean it has any importance. It doesn't mean it's true. It just means it's a thought. And thoughts are really interesting things. Like you can have thoughts about all sorts of things that you don't pay attention to, that you don't give weight to, that you don't get freaked out about. But then as soon as this set of thoughts comes along, it's like, oh no, that must mean something. No, it's just like that other weird thought that you had. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just exactly. A thing. It is thought.
And most people can see that really after the binge. After the binge, they're like, oh yeah, that was just junk from my brain. Like they can see it after the binge. It's just in that moment. So if you can just get through that moment and let it pass, let it come and realize that it doesn't speak for what you truly want. It doesn't. It's just habit. It's just the brain pathways firing that in a way that you've taught them to. So if you can just let them fire and be with your emotions in that moment, it goes away. And then you realize, wow, and you still have the same realization, but you didn't act on the urge. You still realize, oh yeah, that was just junk. I did it, you know, but you don't have the binge to deal with.
Yeah, I love it. It's like that thing that happens naturally after binge, like, wait, that's not what I wanted. As long as you do it before the binge, you don't binge. Ta-da. Yeah,
exactly.
Beautiful. Awesome, awesome. Okay, so the next myth that we're going to debunk is the myth that, you know what, if I just had the perfect meal plan, if I just ate the right way, then I wouldn't be binging anymore. So Catherine, why don't you start out with this one? Like, what are your thoughts on that myth?
That's a huge question and one that comes up so much because I think now there's so much focus out there on eating healthy and clean. And while that's great, I don't think it's necessary for recovery. Like I wrote in my book that when I recovered, I thought I was eating healthy, but this was like, I don't know, 12 years ago. And I was eating like wheat all the time. And I mean, wheat pasta and all this kind of stuff that now, like, I don't know, maybe it's healthy, maybe it's not, but most people say it's not now. So, you know, you can recover and not eat a perfectly clean and healthy diet all the time. So I think it just becomes more fuel for the lower brain, like more fuel for these urges. Oh, I'm not eating perfectly, so I might as well binge. Oh, I went off my meal plan. I ate some junk food, so I might as well keep going. And it's that, you know, those are the urges. Those are these connections you've made over time. And if you overeat, if you don't eat perfectly, your brain automatically is going to say, you might as well binge. And yeah, you can detach from that. You don't have to follow that. But if you sort of let go of the imperfection around the meal plan and realize that you don't have to eat a certain way, then those thoughts are going to feel less powerful because you'll be like, oh, I don't have to binge because I ate a cookie, you know, of course. So that's kind of my thoughts there.
Awesome. Awesome. A couple of thoughts is like, first I want to give like credit where credit is due to like junk food. Like, yes, there are foods that are designed to create binge sort of eating, like foods that are designed to be highly palatable and then the pleasure of them to go away very quickly. So you want to get another one. So I want to just speak to that. Yes. Like if you're eating highly processed food and those sorts of things, it may promote you to want to eat more, but it doesn't make you do anything. And that's the thing, like food doesn't make you do anything. Like you are the one who's in the driver's seat who decides what you do. So although like it may just be a healthier thing to eat healthier, I know that sounds like basic, you don't have to do anything to still make the choices that you want to around food. So it's not really about having the perfect meal plan, especially if that is turning into sort of a diet for you. Most people, when they say, I want to eat healthy, I want to eat clean, it's really, I'm trying to eat in some way to manipulate my body that, so it will be smaller, so it will lose weight, whatever that is. And that, even the mental restriction of that, even if it's not so much of a physical or caloric, you know, restriction, still I find really flares up that chatter, like those urges to binge, because it's like, oh, well, now I've got to be perfect. Perfection and restriction are two things that seem to really make recovery more difficult. Not that it's impossible. You still do what you want, but it's a lot more difficult when you have those sorts of factors. And so this idea of having the perfect meal plan a lot of times will tie into those things. And I also view this as another avoidance thing. Like we debunked the I have to avoid all my triggers. I think of this as another part of that. So it's like, well, one of my triggers is when I don't eat perfectly. So all I have to do is eat perfectly and stick with this just perfect meal plan. And then I'll be able to avoid that trigger. So it's like, no, like eat how you want to eat. And what happens is that when we actually just say, you know what, I can just eat whatever I want, you know, whenever, however much, like just letting go of the restriction, we actually end up eating fine. Like, it's like you can eat like perfectly healthy, clean all day and then binge on like 4 dozen cookies that night because you feel so restricted. Or you can like have a cookie for breakfast. Okay, well, I had a cookie for breakfast. And then, okay, maybe I have some oatmeal, then maybe I have a salad or whatever it is. If you're just eating what you want, we tend to not rebel against that with all the stuff that we don't want because we feel driven to. So I find like you just relax around food is something that really helps. It's not about perfection. It's just about, okay, eat food. Humans have been doing it for a long time without all this guidance from the internet. You know, we're going to be okay. Just trust that and then just move forward. So awesome. Anything else on that myth that you wanted to add, Catherine?
I think that was really good. I guess one thing I was thinking of adding was just that focus on stopping the binging first. Like people, like you said, get caught up in the perfection and it's okay. Like really, it's okay if you don't eat perfect. Just, it's amazing if you're not binging. Like if you're eating in a way that you don't consider ideal, that's okay. Like focus on the binging first. Once that clears, then you'll have more mental space. You'll have more energy to sort of focus on other dietary things that you might want to fix. And maybe you won't. Maybe you'll come stop binging and realize, hey, I'm eating fine. Maybe there'll be other changes you want to make. But, you know, just do it in a non-restrictive type way. And like you said, once you take away those restrictions and you really make things about a choice and you make things about, you know, what you want to eat that makes you feel good, then you end up eating sort of less of that junk food anyway, because you realize it just doesn't make you feel good. It's not restriction. It's not, I can't ever have this. It's just, okay, most of the time I'm choosing not to have this because it doesn't make me feel good, but you know what? I'm going to have it sometimes just for pleasure and that's fine. So.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. All right. So the next myth that we're going to debunk is this idea of, okay, to recover from binge eating, I have to track down all of the origins of why I started and fully understand them from like a historical perspective of my life and my childhood and my past. And then my binge eating will go away because I'll finally get why I started. So I can go ahead and start here and just say, don't worry about it. Relax. Like, the reason that you started binge eating is probably not the reason that you're binge eating now. There are so many ways to start binge eating. Sometimes we're really happy and we like went for that first crazy binge. Sometimes we're really sad. Sometimes we were restricting and dieting. Sometimes we started binge eating when we were 7 years old and we don't even have memories of not doing that. Like, don't worry about it. Don't track down all your relatives. Don't have cry sessions with everyone. I mean, you can if you want to. I'm just saying they're not necessary to recover. Like, for whatever reason you started, just work on the habit now. Because now it's just the habit. It has nothing to do with the origins. It has nothing to do with the real why, the real core of why you're doing it. The reason why you're doing it is because it's a habit. So you just work on breaking the habit. And then I think it's always useful to what I call like gather data. Just get what's useful there. I know that for me, like, I recovered from binge eating and I felt totally free from that and bulimia that came along with it. And then I was like, you know what? I think I started because I was getting so crazy with calories. Like, I was like cutting my calories really low. I was trying so hard to be thin. And then I was like, you know what? I don't really want to have that in my life anymore. Like, that's not really healthy. So then I worked on like, you know, some better, healthier eating that was more adequate for me and my body and my life. So it's one of those things that's like, you look at, okay, what serves you moving on, you know, learn from what you can, but just go ahead and work on the habit. Like, you don't have to track everything down. You don't have to learn everything. Like, I don't know everything about myself in the past. I was a different person. Like, who knows who that woman was? I can't know everything about her, but I know who I am now, and I know the habits that I want to break and change now, so you can just work on that. So I give you all permission slips for a fresh new start, starting right now, and you can just move forward. Awesome. Yeah.
It's that every cell in your body is different every 7 years or something. We're not the same people that we were. I'm not the same person when I started binge eating. For me, like, learning it was from restriction and from dieting was helpful because it was like, okay, like, there is nothing wrong with me. It is not, I went on a diet. I started restricting calories. I was scared that I was going to gain weight because this was a message I got through childhood that, you know, I would gain weight eventually. It was weird. I got it from a lot of different sources in a lot of different ways. And so I restricted calories and knowing that that's what created this survival drive and this urge to eat incredible amounts of food that I never would have considered eating before. It really helped me see, okay, like, that's what happened. Like, all this stuff I learned in therapy about my childhood, like, there were problems in my childhood, but that wasn't the cause. So, you know, learning that for people who diet is very liberating and very like, oh my gosh, there's nothing wrong with me. Now, people on the other side, like you mentioned, that might have started sort of for emotional reasons when they were younger. It's a little maybe harder for them to step back and realize, hey, this is just a habit. But it is, like you said, it doesn't really have anything to do with why you started in the first place. And while it's okay to look there, and if you want to look there and discover some problems, but solving those problems, you're still going to be left with this urge to binge that's going to come automatically, even if you do solve the problems, because that's what you've taught your brain. So, you know, it's just about breaking the habit. So what's important, we've been talking about sort of figuring out why you binge from a historical perspective, but what's really important for recovery is why you binge right now. And that's because of the urges. In my language, the urges, in your language, the chatter, you know, that lower brain is driving you to binge now. And that's what's important. So if you never binge, in rational recovery, Jack Trimpe says, you know, you don't do it now. Like, every moment is now. So if you never binge now, you never binge. So that's just an important thing. I think it's important to remember that it's what happens in the moment before a binge that's more important than, you know, why you develop these urges in the first place.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that a lot of times when we track down the historical perspective, like, we put these labels on ourselves, like, this is my identity. Like, I am a binger. Like, I have an eating disorder. And a lot of times, like you were saying, in the now, that identity informs what we do. Well, how can I not do it now? This is what I've always done. It's what I do, you know? So if we can just kind of like detach that, like, actually, you know, maybe it's not what you do now. Like, who cares about all that fast? You know, it's like, just move forward from here on out. And just another thought that came to mind is like, so the way that our brain works, there's something called the reticular activating system, which is essentially our brains always find what we ask it to look for. So any question that you ask your brain, it's going to come up with evidence, even if it's not true at all. It's just, your brain is just like, okay, I'll do it. I'll find that stuff. And it'll also push down any evidence that is against that. So for instance, if you're looking for like all, if you think that you are binging because of, you know, your horrible childhood or something that happened in the past, your brain is going to find all sorts of horrible things that happened in your past. But if you're like every other person in the world, we've all had horrible things that have happened in the past. Some people have had more trauma than others, like, but your brain will always find what it's looking for. So it will find all of the trauma in the past, and with that reticular activating system, it will also diminish any sort of happy memories in the past because it's not what it's looking for. So it can also be just kind of a depressing journey to try to like sort out every terrible thing that's ever happened to you. And like, I mean, I am certainly with, you know, people who I have empathy for, like, I don't think that, you know, we are saying that any of that is invalid and any sort of trauma in the past, like that's probably good to work through, but working through it so that you can recover from binge eating is probably not the best use of your time. I say, if you want to deal with that, deal with that. If you want to deal with binge eating and that habit, then deal with that. And you can do both, but they don't have to be so interwoven. So awesome.
Separating the actual life traumas from the binge eating problem really just makes recovery more efficient for people.
Yeah. Agreed. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the myth of like, okay, if you just stop binge eating, you're going to lose weight. That's a huge driving force for a lot of people. So Catherine, how would you respond to that idea?
It's tough. It's a tough question. I think that the biggest thing is not to make weight the focus of recovery. Like, even if you don't drop a single pound, recovery is 100% worth it. Like, you get your life back. You get to live without this constant shame and pain and just feeling bloated and sick. And it's worth it. Like, no matter if a single pound comes off or not. And I think knowing that and really having other motivations for recovery, like what you want to do with your life and the people you want to be there for, and having other focuses to why you want to recover besides weight loss is super helpful. And the people who do go on to recover are, you know, those people who this isn't all about weight, because when it becomes all about weight, you stop binge eating, you're like, oh, I'm going to try to lose weight now and go on a restrictive diet. And then the urges kind of come back or never go away. And it just becomes just a lot more complicated than it needs to be. So, I mean, gosh, the bottom line is just everyone is different when it comes to weight, and everyone has a different history coming into this. Like, if you've come from severe restriction and you binge, and you might only binge back to your natural weight. So then when you stop binge eating, you're not going to lose weight because you're already at your natural weight. Like, even though you gained weight from your restriction, like from the weight you were at when you were restricting, you haven't binged yourself above your natural weight. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it just depends on your history and like where you are. But the goal is really always just to let your body find its natural weight, to let your body gravitate toward that weight that it feels comfortable and healthy. And everybody is different in that way. So, you know, just letting go of the idea that you have to be a certain weight to be recovered, or you have to, you know, your recovery weight has to look like someone else's, because it's just different. Like, I always remember when I was in therapy, I thought that like recovered women couldn't be thin. And I wrote this in my book that like, I'm just a naturally thin person. And I almost feel the need to like apologize for it, but I don't think it's necessarily good. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And I don't think I'm any healthier than someone who's more curvy. And in fact, I wish I was more curvy, but you know, we all don't have to have the perfect body image and the perfect weight to recover. So I just think letting go of just this idea stopping binging is all about weight loss, and focus more on stopping binging is about health and getting your life back, can just really just take you a lot further in recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also say like the focus on weight loss is something that oftentimes keeps us in the cycle of like, okay, well, I'm going to stop binging because I want to lose weight. Okay, I stopped binging. Well, now I can, you know, do more things to lose weight. And then we start binging again because we're restricting. So it's just this constant cycle. So if we can just step out of that and say, I want to stop binge eating because I want to stop binge eating, and whatever reason that is for you outside of weight as well, I find is a really more useful motivation. And just being okay with the journey. So just to share a little bit, you know, about my personal like recovery and what happened with me weight wise. Like, when I was bulimic, it kept me at a weight, at least temporarily. I had to fight harder and harder to stay there, but a weight that was much lower than my natural weight. I didn't realize that. I had the concept at the time that you can be any weight that you want. You just have to eat the right way, which for me was insane. It was really, really low calories. So when I recovered from binge eating and started eating normally, I gained weight, and I gained weight rapidly, and it freaked me out. And I would just sit and I would just cry because I could feel the extra weight on my body, and it felt very uncomfortable and very foreign. But I was more committed to sanity than I was to how my body looked. And I kind of had to get to that point and come to that realization. I didn't gain weight forever. Like, you do not see me before you, you know, it's like, it's not like I'm, you know, 30 more pounds in every video that I do. You know what I mean? It's like, I got up to kind of that weight that my body is apparently just naturally at. And then I just kind of stayed there, and now I'm kind of getting used to that. So some people will stop binge eating, and because of all the extra calories they were consuming, they'll just naturally like lose weight and they'll go back down to sort of that normal set point. But kind of getting those ideas out of your mind, which I know is not an easy thing to do. And a lot of us are very driven by, you know, weight loss, just because we have a society that puts so much unneeded emphasis on body size and body type and all that. I know it's a motivating factor for a lot of people, but just if you can find other motivating factors and just like, okay, I'm going to recover, and just be okay with the journey. So a lot of women that I coach, like when they are done with binge eating, they're still upset because they're overeating. And I applaud and say, yay, we get to deal with overeating now because you're not binge eating. Like, they can start eating better, and they can start eating more how they want to, and they can start eating healthier. They can do the things that are actually going to help their health long-term because they're not binge eating anymore. Like, it's really hard to improve the way that you eat if you want to have better health when you've got this big thing in the way, like, oh, and by the way, every other day I eat 5,000 calories I wasn't planning on. Like, it's something that once you have out of the way, don't worry about going straight from recovery to perfection. You're never going to get to perfection. You're going to go from binge eating less to, everyone's a little different, but this is an example, to, oh, I don't binge eat anymore. Oh, okay. Maybe now I can work on overeating. Okay. Maybe now I can work on having higher quality food. Okay. Like, whatever serves your life, but you can actually work on those things once that's out of the way. So I don't know if you're going to lose weight, if you're going to gain weight, if you're going to stay the same, if your hair color is going to change. I have no idea what's on the other side of your recovery, but whatever it is, like, just go there if you want, and you can do that, and then figure it out on the other end. A lot of times we think, well, I need to just figure out everything right now. I have to have my whole plan before I recover. No, just work on recovering and then go from there. So, yep. Any other thoughts on that, Catherine?
Yeah, because if you start thinking you have your whole, you need to have your whole plan before you stop binge eating, what's your lower brain going to say? Your chatter brain's going to say, oh, because I don't have my whole plan, we might as well binge. So, you know, that's, it just really helps to let go of that perfection. And if for some reason, like, you don't go back to your natural weight, whatever that is, whether it's higher than you are now, like, it really depends on a lot of factors. If you're purging, there's just a lot of factors involved. So we can't say, you know, you will lose weight or you will gain weight. It's just not something that we would say. But if something happens with your weight that you're not comfortable with, that, let's say you don't feel like you're at your natural weight, let's say you can't gain weight, or you're body is not naturally losing weight and you think you should because you've cut out like all those extra binges, then you'll be in a position to deal with it in a healthy way, in a healthy, like, non-diet type of way. That could involve like medical things that could be going on, hormonal issues. Like, it's not always calories in, calories out thing. Like, oh, I'm at a weight I don't think my body should be at, so I'm going to starve myself. Like, that's not the way to approach it. The way to approach it is in a more holistic way and figuring out what the problem is and how you can improve it in a sustainable way.
Yeah. Awesome. And kind of going along with that is, you know, kind of this last myth that we wanted to share with you today was this idea of like, okay, well, I need to just have a great body image and just feel great about my body and accept it how it is before I can recover. So what I would say to this is one of the first, well, so there's an assumption here that because you don't feel positive about your body that you're binge eating. So it's another one of those sort of like, oh, this is a trigger. This is a coping thing for how bad I feel about my body. So we already kind of debunked that. So I want to kind of get that out of the way. I don't believe that body image is linked directly to binge eating and that habit at all. However, I do believe that there is a link with a confounding variable, which is dieting. a lot of times we won't be happy with how our body works, so we'll start dieting and restricting calories, and that will flare up our instincts to eat more, and we start getting this appetite that is like so foreign to us, and then we get into this habit. So I do think they're linked, but you know, not directly. So I would just say, like, you know, focus on just recovering. Like, don't worry about that. Like, those things come. I think that's a good thing. If you were to work on something that, don't expect it to be necessarily connected, but if you were going to work on something at the same time as you're working on your recovery, I think it's really useful to work on just like what you think about your body and body image and those sorts of things, like being more accepting of, you know, a wider range of body types, because you might have one of those body, those wider ranges of body types. Like, not everyone who quits binge eating turns into a supermodel. Like, you know, it just doesn't happen. If you weren't a natural supermodel before, you weren't, you won't be. So it's one of those things we're kind of working on, you know what, like, I'm just going to be okay. Like, really looking at, I've got a bunch of interviews, like body positive interviews. There's just good stuff out there, and there's more and more stuff to just really help with these ideas that we have had just pounded into us, you know, from our world and the media and very strange historical reasons why we value thinness. Like, it's a really interesting thing to look into. But you don't have to love your body to recover. Once you recover, it doesn't mean you're going to love your body then. Like, you can go the rest of your life binge-free, fully recovered, and still not think that you have the coolest body in the world. Like, that's something that can be a totally separate journey. And it would be a fun thing to work on. I think it would be a healthy thing to work on. But you don't have to have it in place for recovery, and it's not the cause for your binge eating in the first place. So anything that you would want to add to that, Catherine?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. It's like, you don't have to love your body. And in therapy, I had this idea that I did. And when you're eating so many calories at a time, I mean, I was eating massive amounts of food and feeling so bloated and just awful. And it wasn't my natural weight. And I was told to like accept that and love it. And I just couldn't at the time. And like you said, I still don't love my body. I mean, you can go your whole life not loving your body and still live a full life. It doesn't mean there's no benefits to feeling confident in yourself and feeling good about yourself and feeling healthy, but you don't have to love the way you look to have a full life. Like, you can love other parts of yourself, and it just doesn't need to be such a focus. And it's sad that it is for women. And, you know, both of us have daughters, and we don't want our daughters to grow up like that. We want them to value themselves for who they are and not the way they look.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any other myths that have come to your mind, Catherine, as we've been chatting, that it would be wrong to not debunk before we get off of this particular interview?
Pressure's on. You know, not really. I think we covered everything.
Yeah. One last thing that kind of comes to my mind is this myth of, like, I can't recover. I think that there are women who think, like, that it's too late for them, that this is just the way their life is going to be, that yes, that thing works for other people, but it's not going to work for me. So maybe just to wrap up, that's the final myth that I want to debunk. I truly believe that anyone can recover from an eating disorder, that anyone can have a normal relationship with food. I don't think that there are any factors that would keep you from being successful. So if you have that myth in your mind, like, even if you're not sure, just believe what serves you. Just believe, like, you know what? No, it's going to work for me eventually, and keep going, because all it is about, you know, getting up one more time than you fell down. You know what I mean? Like, that's what recovery is. It's just like to keep going. That's the only ingredient necessary, I think, to just have what you want with your relationship with food and just having your sanity back and your mental energy back and all that jazz. So I am excited to, you know, remind everyone, if you're seeing this interview at some future time, it may already be out, or if you're seeing it when we're leading up to the launch of this, then Either way, there's a link below that you can click on to give you more information. But Katherine Hansen is the author of a lovely book that changed my life called Brain Over Binge. And that was kind of the final key for me to be fully recovered from my years of craziness with food and bulimia and binge eating. And it is an incredible book that I think the whole world should know about. And we now have an audio book. And I am so happy to say that I got to narrate it. And that was just such a fun project. And it was kind of like my dream to be able to work with Katherine that way and get that book available for more people. So it's been a really fun partnership. So there is an audiobook, you guys, of Brain Over Binge. And there's a link below to get more details. We're doing a fun kind of sneak preview right now where you will get a series of emails that have the like clips from the audiobook, and it has support videos that I've created, and it has fun exploration questions. So we did close registration, but I'm going to put the link below anyway. If you want to jump in, you'll get a link to the page with the clips that are already out so far. And there's an opportunity for a live webinar with Katherine Hansen and I, where you can ask your questions, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and there'll be more details about how to be a part of that. So click the link below. You can also subscribe to this channel for weekly videos every Monday about how to use nothing but your brain to get what you want in life and the ways that you want to feel around food and any sort of habit. Anything else that's on your mind before we pop off for today, Katherine?
Well, I just want to thank you for being the narrator of that book. And it's just amazing to work with you and to have your voice there, because it just means a lot to me to have someone who recovered using this and who's also an amazing voice talent to do this for my book. So I really appreciate it. And we're excited about everyone else getting to listen to it.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for coming back on for a return episode. I'm really excited for people to just hear more of you and your words and your wisdom. So thank you guys for tuning in. Feel free to comment below with any sort of recovery myths or questions that you would want to have debunked at some point in the future. And we can certainly do things like this again. And there'll be videos every Monday, and I might make a video about what you comment. So go ahead and comment with anything else that you would like to know about or just have questions about. Thank you so much for being on, Katherine. Really appreciate it. And this is Katherine Hansen and Lydia Wente, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!